following discussion is not necessarily the views of all involved. The goal is to start open and honest discussion in the Christian worldview. Like all things, weigh what you hear with what you know, and join us in our pursuit for the truth. Enjoy the podcast.
Josh is already yawning, so I guess he's bored. Sorry, we've been back for 3 seconds.
From turt you were made to turt you will return.
Turtle recall.
Young Earth creations should have no problem believing dragons existed, right?
That's true, actually.
Right?
All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Rate Saints podcast. I'm one of your hosts here, Caleb. To my left is...
I'm Joshua. To my left is...
I'm Joel. And to my left...
I'm Colton. And to my left...
It's me. Colton was in another time zone, but that's okay. He's back now.
What's with the big pause?
He's a bear.
I'm a bear. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Barely hanging on. Anyway.
Seeing how Colton's back, also, we're back.
We're back, but we are so back. I think.
We're going to try.
Let's clear the air. It's been a couple of weeks. Patron saints, it's good to see you again. Here's the situation.
We took a couple of weeks.
This is audio only. You can't see my tears streaming down my face. No, I'm kidding. It's been a couple of weeks since we released the episode. This is due to life happening and the podcast getting put on the back burner for a few moments while we were able to collect ourselves due to different life events that all simultaneously happened to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It was a perfect storm for sure. And not one that we want to repeat, but we do want to, get back into the swing of things. And so that's why this week we're doing a turt. We're going to have a bit of conversation. Josh is already yawning, so I guess he's bored. Sorry, we've been back for 3 seconds. At least wait until the media plug is done before you shut off the episode, Josh. No, I'm kidding. This is terrible. So thank you for your return to our listenership. And we want to get into the episode. If you want to watch all of our past and future episodes, you can check us out at secondratesaints.com. If you'd like to drop a question, you can use either the comment chat or the comment, what's it called? Chat feature on our website, or a comment on one of our YouTube videos or our Spotify videos, which I didn't realize you could leave comments on, but
yeah,
for our turt today, we have some comments from our Spotify stuff. Mm-hmm. So whatever. We're so back and
it's so over. We're so back.
It's so over. It's kind of more the vibe, but Colton,
yes.
What have you read? Because we're getting back into the swing of things.
I've read a couple things, but the main one, the more important thing I've read, I got a few looks there. Ooh, I never have a what have you read, so that's why there's the skepticism. Yeah. But
it's not true.
One of the books.
Colton's absolutely valid in what he said.
Thank you. I like the vibe in the studio tonight. Hostile.
The book I read is called Israel and Revolution, 6 to 74 CE.
What's that about?
I wonder. It's the subtitle being Political History Based on the Writings of Josephus. So this is talking about the rise and fall of the revolutions in Israel from the time after Herod the Great. So this would be right not too long after Jesus is born, during the time of the census. It does have a bit of history before that as well, but basically it talks about all the buildup and fall based off of how Josephus writes it in his Jewish War and Antiquities of the Jews, that he, this guy then condenses, explains, and basically uses his scholarly expertise in those two books to talk about how Josephus puts it forward. Yes. Compares it with other contemporary authors of the day, too.
That whole era is like a very difficult time to approach.
Very, right? Yes.
How accessible is this book?
I would say it's very accessible. Okay. It's one of the reasons why when I wrote a paper based on this same time period, mm-hmm. this was one of my main sources. Not because it was comprehensive necessarily, although it was fairly comprehensive, but rather because it wrote it in a way that was very easy to understand. If you are not in, like, say, Bible college or seminary or something like that, it's probably not the most interesting thing. If you like history, or if you like, this is something that you feel like you need to learn more about the intertestamental or testamental period, this is a very good book to read for that. Yeah. If you want to know why it is that the Second Temple was destroyed, he goes into pretty good detail. This is by David M. Rhodes. I didn't say that before, but he goes into pretty good detail about what Josephus argues are the reasons. Again, this is Josephus.
He doesn't come up with the right conclusion.
He does go over a little bit over, is Josephus right? Probably not on these things, but we can say why with confidence these things are true, that kind of thing. So it is also a bit of a biography when it comes to Josephus. Like, hey, he was very close to these events and had very specific political reasons to either obfuscate or emphasize certain parts of the story. So he goes into it.
Now, if that sounds interesting to anybody, that sounded negative. I found it interesting.
If anybody cares.
That's not true. It is fascinating. Intertestamental period, and also the decline of
Second Temple.
The destruction of the Second Temple, and what impact that has on Judaism by and large, and how that kind of runs alongside Christianity is fascinating. Colton, yes. You and I have actually, at the time of this recording, have already recorded an episode.
We have.
It will be released after this. Probably, but what's... Yeah,
look forward to that.
Yeah? You'd incur, like, how much overlap is there between the two?
Quite a bit. I was actually very surprised. I didn't base my paper off of this book, and I didn't base my paper off of Josephus wholesale, because I wrote my paper on the Zealots specifically, and the revolutionaries in Jerusalem up until the fall of Jerusalem, and a little bit after. And this book gets a little bit, Josephus is the one who blames those people for all of that, and he explains it, but he goes into more detail than just who are the Zealots kind of thing. If you're looking for something like, how did Jerusalem fall? This is a fantastic book because it goes over what Josephus says, and he is the best source when it comes to that kind of thing. He is not the only source. He is also a very biased source. So, but all of them are. So it's very complicated. I would definitely recommend it for sure.
Sick.
It's also, listen to the episode too. It's very interesting.
That's the thing about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. There's so many like different groups that are trying to like lay claim to it. So it does have a certain like sex appeal. Anyways, we'll continue. Josh, what do you think of the cover?
Pretty much everybody involved sucked. I'm going to say that.
Oh. Yes, that time was fraught with just no one. Like, there are certain periods in history where you look and you go, okay, I can see a moral actor and an immoral actor.
Yep.
And that period of time,
it's one of the few times I can say Rome conquering them is probably the good thing here.
Oh, you know, because they rejected Christ.
Whoa.
I don't think we can say that. We talk about it a little bit in that God episode,
did, though.
Every other time that Israel's been decimated, it was prior to this.
Right, because God's on their side all the time when it's not, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, he must be against them every time it's destroyed.
Well, and that's because the dragon has to attack for Jesus to come, so.
Okay, well, I don't know why you just...
But that's the...
that little Jesus bit comes before that. Know. That little bit, I'm not sure if I'm on board.
Josh just started a new dispensation. I think is what he did.
It's starting now. And anyway, whenever you listen to this,
if you don't know what we're talking about, read Revelation.
Josh, I'm sure he'll
explain it.
The cover is it's a solid black cover with a coin.
Yep.
On it
That they printed in Israel when it became free from Roman rule.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It was very cool. You would have to read the book to know that.
Yeah.
But
that's why it's on the book. Yeah.
Yep.
Academic.
Academic. I would say that this covers a 1.5.
Wow, that is remarkably low, because I would say this is like a solid 3, maybe.
3?
3.5. Yeah, it's I like black books, I'm gonna say
No, yeah, I do. It's the font, and it's
okay.
Yeah.
No, I like that the revolution's in red.
Yeah, it's there bad. You go. Oh.
Bloody.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know another one of the texts for that course is Talmud to the Mishnah. Did you end up reading that as well?
I used parts of it, but it doesn't cover as much the Zealots specifically. So
yeah,
I read it for more the history and the context, less so than the actual content of my paper.
It also doesn't come from a Christian perspective at all,
no,
whatsoever.
It's pretty obvious as you read it. Yeah,
it's a little bit...
I should be more specific in why I'm giving it a 1.5. It's more of... It's not that I dislike it.
You just can't see it.
It's just not doing anything for me.
Oh, it's all black.
No, it's just...
It doesn't have that appeal.
No, it's just lacking.
The sect appeal.
It's just lacking, that's all.
Okay.
Like, there could be simple but effective.
Yep.
And this is just simple and I think lacking.
That's fair. I think it really stands out. I like it.
Yeah.
But I get it.
If it was on my shelf, it would stand out, but...
Sure. Bad way. No.
No. Okay.
I give the book probably a 4 out of 5. I think it's good. It's not as comprehensive as I would like, but every other very comprehensive book is very long. And this tries to be as comprehensive as it can be about Josephus's work and other works without being that far. Anyway.
Beautiful. Cool. That period is a period that I would like to know more about.
It's fascinating. Such a good time. However, before we can talk about that next week, what are we talking about this week, Joel?
Turt. We back.
Turdy dancing.
From turt you were made to dirt you will return.
Turtle recall. Well,
it's the same joke.
Turtle Drama Island.
Turtle Drama Island is good.
Thank you.
Any more we want to get out?
Do we want to explain what turt is?
No, I don't think we do. Let's continue. Now, turt is our lovely nickname for thoughts in real time, where the guys don't know what's coming, and I read off comments from you, the listener, now an active participant, if in some ways the fifth host of the podcast.
That's so funny.
We have coined the host of Static Union.
Yeah, Stuart.
It's actually the Communion of the Saints.
That's Communion of the Saints. Host of Static Union is when you're on the podcast with us in an interview.
They're static. They're unified to Stuart completely, right?
Oh, man, no. We can't make Stuart the deity of the podcast.
No. He's the
podcast is clearly Christ is still the deity of the podcast.
I mean, yeah.
Dude, I'm not entertaining any of this.
I'm entertaining.
We have a literal saint.
Think of the mediatrics.
We have an icon as our logo.
Logos are icons.
Let's get into iconography. No, we're not getting into iconography. And I swear, if anybody gets an icon with the saint guy... printed on it.
Don't. Please don't.
At least do Byzantine era. Anyways. super respectfully.
It'll be coming up.
Okay. I'm going to hype you guys up with some of the comments that we got.
We sell merch. We sell idols.
Ooh. I mean, there's another question. I know we just got back, but Second Rate Saints merch? Question mark? Man.
Question mark?
I should have stayed retired. Anyways. First... comment that I noticed when I went to collect these things was, miss you guys.
Aww.
So thanks, Alan, appreciate that. Then the next one was Josh saying, guys, it's been a whole month, we're waiting for a new episode. Basically our absence was felt, and so that's nice. We appreciate you, the listener, coming back in and getting ready. Anyways, do you guys remember when we had that conversation with Eric?
Yes. Yep.
About epistemology.
Yes.
Yep.
Under that episode. Hey guys, really enjoyed listening to a Christian's perspective on the Neoplatonic influence of the epistemological context of Socratic forms.
Uh-huh. Good. Here's the thing.
Based sentence.
I paid copious amounts of money to get educated to understand what he said.
True.
And I did. I feel very happy.
I understand what you mean. I did too, and we didn't really talk about it, though. That's the thing.
I don't really get it. There was one guy who was like a guest lecturer in one class I took that was like forms. And they're like, oh, okay.
That's not true. We talked about it ad nauseum like stuff like that throughout all of college. Remember? It annoyed everybody.
Yes, with each other, not with profs.
Yeah, half the college experience is paying money to hang out with new friends.
Neoplatonism is fun. Anyway, what was this question?
That's kind of the question. Okay. What do you guys think we learned about Socratic forms?
We didn't talk about Socratic forms.
We did.
Very lightly in a different way.
No, that's true. Neoplatonism was not like the main focus, but like the objective subjective problem was a huge focus.
I would love to have some. Oh, I do have somebody that I could bring on for Neoplatonism. My family contact friend, Roman Catholic prof. Neoplatonism coming up at some point.
Don't dox him. They'll find him so easily. I don't even know who he is.
I don't know who this is.
That conversation is actually like in a couple books I was reading, like that conversation, I was like, oh yeah, things are making sense. Like it was highlighted in other things I was reading, but like not using the same language.
So I think there's also a danger in some of, like, I like when Christians can interact with ancient philosophy, essentially. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a problem with associating those too closely and saying that there is, like, because of course, Aristotle and Plato, essential to Western values.
Mm-hmm.
Not as influential in like Christian doctrine as sometimes we pretend they are.
To quote Tertullian, what does Jerusalem have to do with Athens?
True.
Fair enough.
However,
Tertullian said a lot of very wise things.
Yeah, some less, some more.
Yeah. However, the eternal debate is like that. There are many Christians who affirm Aristotle as being basically like a proto-Christian when it comes to a lot of certain ideas. Not in that he was submitting to Christ, but many of his ideas were forming towards a more Christian ideal.
Yeah.
More than like most other philosophers of the time or even after.
Yeah.
And I do really like Aristotle. I'm a 50-50 on Plato, and I don't know nearly enough about Socrates, but I do know a bit. I like the Socratic method and dialogue. That's great. When we talked about the realm, we didn't really talk about the realm of forms or anything like that.
Yes.
Or formic thought, but Neoplatonism is a big part of a lot of people's perception of Christianity. And a lot of Christian philosophy centers around yes or no Neoplatonism, especially when you get into the higher stuff. I personally am not a massive fan of Neoplatonism from a Christian perspective, but I'm not totally against it either.
Well, it gets into like, there's a couple fault lines denominationally, sacramentally, everything. One of the fault lines throughout the podcast epistemologically is some of us are more sympathetic towards realism and some of us are more sympathetic towards nominalism.
Yeah.
Is it nominalism? It is nominalism. Sorry, forgive me. My brain just crashed. And you know, Neoplatonism's all up in that stuff. So not that it's the only system on the market for that, but yeah. And so there's fault lines all over.
True.
Yeah. And at least what Aristotelian and Platonic philosophy gives us is language to talk about things and describe things that the biblical language and Hebrew doesn't.
Mm.
And I think that's important in the discussion of Neoplatonism and Aristotelian philosophy is you can adopt language and discuss things using their terms, but you don't have to believe in Platonic philosophy. Mm. And that doesn't mean that Platonic philosophy formed Christianity.
Nope.
Or
definitely not.
Or even necessarily, depending on the discussion, merged into Christian philosophy. But it at least gives us terms to be able to discuss things and was influential in some of the early church's formulation of theological terminology.
That is true. One of the very interesting biblical topics that I got to research when I was at school was Hebrews and whether or not Hebrews was influenced by Greek philosophy as part of its motivation for being written and stuff, especially when it comes to the Platonic stuff.
Yeah.
And based in its structure as well, right? Like how the structure
is rhetoric first.
Yeah. Rhetoric and structure. Yeah. But yes. And potentially also, it's not like infused parts of philosophy as like, that's not what theology is kind of thing. But rather, what's the guy?
Apollos.
Yes, Apollos, but the guy from Egypt, Philo.
Yeah.
Using Philo's ideas of how he understood philosophy and if that's...
Well,
I personally know that's not part of it, but I can see why someone would say so.
Well, and Philo and a bunch of other Christian philosophers at the time.
Mm. I was not Christian, but yeah.
I'm saying other. Philo, okay. The Jewish philosopher, and some Christian philosophers during the arguments of between Athens and Jerusalem, thinking like Tertullian, made the argument that Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato may have gotten some of their ideas from early Jewish wisdom literature developing through into Greece.
It's technically possible. I'm not convinced of. How legitimate that is.
And you could at least make the argument that so far as they agree, one did come earlier. Doesn't mean that they influenced. Two people can invent the bow and arrow separately.
True.
So.
No. No, yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. And it's just encouraging to see that people want to hear more about that. Anyways.
It will come up again. Hopefully not too boring, but.
Mm-hmm. It can get technical, but I think it's fun, especially if we have guests who, have their own take on the podcast. Okay.
If I imagine a chair, does that make it real?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Let's keep.
It has a higher form of reality. See, than I've just it did started before an argument. You thought of it. But anyway, carry on.
Interesting. Does it exist in the mind of God or just me?
At minimum, you.
It does both, yes. All existence is borrowed from his self-existence.
There we go. That's Neoplatonism stuff.
But that's a theological term. Yeah, how that's articulated in how that's articulated and matches up against reality, that would be Neoplatonism.
Sure.
We are being lent being by being.
He's right.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what? That's actually pretty cool. I like that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Wasn't me, it was Greggy of NYSA, but whatever. Greggy?
Man. Greggy.
I can't speak this episode and I've got to do all the questions. So Saint I'm Greg. Sorry for misrepresenting is that you.
The guy who was the...
Gregory of Nyssa, yeah.
He was the Praetorian Guard who was martyred by Domitian?
I'm pretty sure it's a different guy.
That's a different guy, because Gregory of Nyssa's Desert Father type deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, different guy.
I don't know if he is a Desert Father, or he's just around during that time. Yeah.
I'm thinking of the guy who's this patron saint of England.
Yeah, no. Yeah, not that guy. different Greg.
Who slayed the dragon. Anyway, carry on.
Wait, slaying the dragon.
Yeah.
That's nope, the just legend, move on. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I had AKA a dragon whales. Side tangent, but we won't talk about... AKA whales, okay, we're on the same side tangent here.
Nope, they had hollow bones, that's why they didn't leave fossils.
So, Young Earth creationists should have no problem believing dragons existed, right?
Why? Can you lay that out for me?
Because we found dragon bones.
When?
What? Because if dragons exist alongside of people, it's just dinosaurs, right?
That's true, actually.
Right? Giant lizard. If your standard is giant lizard and you're not some tool from Game of Thrones that needs to have arms or something, whatever. Well, I don't care. Wyvern, dragon, whatever.
No.
You don't have to be specific.
The pterodactyl had like a 30.
pterodactyl. The silent beer.
No. You don't understand. The scientific community, which is close to me saying the satanic community, because they rhyme almost.
Yeah.
Therefore, they made up giant lizard bones. They're fake to make you think that the earth is older than it really is, to make you stop believing in the Bible.
Hey, young earth creationists, we love you. We think you're Christian. We don't believe that all of you are like this. However, I do like these people. They're very funny.
Here's the thing. If young earth creationism allows me to believe in dinosaurs, just like it allows me to believe in
the pterodactyl had like an 11 meter wingspan.
It's huge. Yeah. No,
you're stuck
huge.
On the pterodactyl.
Which is weird because I didn't bring it up. I guess the dragon would be a pterodactyl,
right?
It's a
36 foot wingspan.
That's pretty
welcome
cool.
to the Second Rate Saints. We can go from Platonism and Socrates straight to pterodactyls.
This is where we respond to your comments and our inner thoughts.
Dude. This is a diagram of it next.
Come on.
They can't see it at home.
That is nuts.
Joel.
Google pterodactyl.
Okay, if you can spell it.
I can't spell it.
P-T-E-R-O-D-A-C-T-Y-L.
Just think Petri. Yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
Peach. Land Before Time reference. We are so back right now.
Joel, what's the next question?
I don't know, man.
You said thoughts in real time, and I've been having a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, that's good.
Like four of them.
There's a question that does relate to this. I'm just bad at planning episodes.
No, let's do it.
Please ask.
And this one's specifically asked to me, which is, have we talked about this one? Maybe we have. If we, you know what? If I don't remember, you guys probably won't remember. So we'll go into it.
Does it ever get frustrating to find yourself wishy-washy on theological ideas like young earth versus old earth? Did we talk about this
one? Yeah, I think this is the third time you've asked that.
This is not the third time I've asked it.
I don't know if it's the third.
I don't remember this question at all.
But you have to answer the question.
Okay. Quick answer.
No, I like being wishy-washy.
Cognitive dissonance is fine.
Whoa.
Not wishy-washy if I don't believe it's wishy-washy.
I don't think it's wishy-washy. I think they're just two conclusions you can draw from the same text if you have different values.
If
you bring different questions to the text.
Yeah, if by wishy-washy you mean that you flop back and forth between them, then yes.
Now I'm second-guessing how many of these questions we've talked about before, so you have to bear with me.
That's all right. Okay, so I think there's a... can I flip the question around?
Yeah.
Do it.
Or sorry, analyze the question. I think the question comes presupposed.
We're putting you on trial.
That one of the positions must be true. And that to not hold to an abstract presentation of the text is therefore wishy-washy because you didn't align with one of the two old or young earth positions. And I think
so. You're saying there's a secret third option?
No,
yeah, framework.
There's many other options you can take. But I think the question presupposes that young or old earth must be true and that those are the two options.
One of them has to be true. Whether or not that's what the Bible presents is the different argument.
That's Josh's
point. What I'm saying.
Okay.
So the question is presupposing that the two positions that this individual has in their head must be true. And if you don't align with one of those two, then you're wishy-washy. When we have presented that there are many positions one can take, but also that you shouldn't take. Yeah. You should read the Bible and read the Bible the way it was written and allow the Bible to interpret what you believe to present what you believe.
I also understand the idea of the Bible does feel fairly clear that it's young earth if you read it. However, with a lot of other contexts and stuff, it also seems very clear that it's old earth. I'm using like old earth, young earth. One of them is true. Just like framework hypothesis is lumped in by most people as old earth because you believe in an old earth. You just believe the Bible's written in a framework way.
It's often paired that way. Yeah.
Yeah. With young earth, you inherently believe that the earth is either 6 or 10,000 years old. And like, there's no compromise on the age of the earth, except unless you're the in between. What's it called?
Gap theory,
which is still old earth. It's just slightly different. It's weird. Yeah.
Two stage earth.
And also
gives
some side quests to Satan that is like, and this is what he was doing.
Yeah. It does give side quests to Satan, which I like side quests. So
I don't like Satan though.
That's fair.
Like, I don't know. It seems weird to,
but you're supposed to love your enemies.
Well, Josh is making a pro-Satanism case for some reason, so that's how you know it's a thought in real time. Jesus didn't
say except for.
I don't know if that phrase is intended to go beyond fellow humans.
I think the Bible's fairly clear.
Doesn't say except.
Get back, Satan.
This is on an episode that Josh and I did on biblically accurate demons. Which I don't believe we've covered in a second in a turt, have we? I feel nervous now that I'm like going to start covering questions. We're already done. Whatever, leave that in the comments and we'll respond to that probably.
Yell at us with timestamps.
Demons. I'm curious on to your opinion why pop culture and... Sorry, let me restart. I'm curious on your opinion on why pop culture slash people in general obsess with demons and the demonic. It's fair to say most people go through a phase... myself included, where demons were loosely studied for curiosity's sake. They simply make for entertaining stories. Is there something deeper we might be overlooking? Very fun episode. You two make a great compliment to each other. So I think we just got shipped, Josh, which is great.
Yep.
That's not a good joke. I apologize.
I've been saying it for years.
I think that the reason why pop culture has made them more popular is the forbidden fruit effect, which is based... essentially this Trisound effect, but
which is why Christianity is rebellious now, which is weird.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? But it's the idea of like, oh, don't do this. You're told demons are evil, demons are whatever. There's a weird fascination that comes with when we center an idea or a culture around this is bad. It's the same thing when we become super hyper puritanical when it comes to sex too. It starts getting more extreme and forbidden fruit kind of aspects to it.
Well, and our culture has recently been obsessed with overturning taboos.
Yes.
And so,
and then also now it's cultural to then be pro tradition. So it's yes. This weird kind of amorphic back and forth between two different sides of people who now don't agree completely. And culture becomes this, you either choose one side, one culture or the other, which has not happened ever really in history. But now angels are becoming the cool forbidden fruit.
You think angels are becoming?
Yeah, the biblically accurate angel thing.
Like, oh, yeah, that is true.
Yeah, people are fascinated with it. Like, oh, yeah, St. Michael is the one, or not. Yeah, I guess it's St. Michael. Comes and he slays Lucifer, and the pictures of that. It's like, oh, that's so cool. That kind of thing.
To be fair, the fact that there are pictures of that, and we've represented it so many times, shows that the fascination is not without precedent, right?
Like, sure.
There's foundation already on that.
Two comments. One of them is I think you have the resurgence of traditionalism, and part of that is our society used to focus more heavily on healthy spiritual imagery and concepts. So, and those are embodied and communicated, at least whether they're articulated in a religious sense or a Christian sense, via angelic powers, right?
Okay.
Secondly, if you're going to entertain, like, for the sake of fascination, looking into spiritual stuff, just for the sake of fascination, like lore, right?
Earth lore.
Sure, to a certain degree, right? You're going to either look in, very few people are going to look into the angelic, because then you just have to bump up against, okay, but like, what do I actually think about God? What do I actually think about Jesus? What do I actually...
Also, you immediately hit the wall of, oh, they're subservient to God. Therefore, if I find them cool, should I be subservient to God?
You immediately bump into, so I actually have to deal with Christian lore.
Yeah.
Right. But if you just look at demons, you can kind of just, yeah, whatever, stay wishy-washy and whatever, Abaddon. And non-conclusive on Apollyon. Those questions. You can say non-conclusive on those issues.
Yeah.
Sorry, I talked over you a bit.
That's okay. Actually entertaining some things over here. I think that's also one of the reasons why people got fascinated with like Norse and Greek mythology for a while.
What do you mean? Well, I'm a neo-pagan.
Yeah, sure.
I sacrifice goats. Oh, wait, no, I don't.
Any like personified cult or even more like Eastern ideas of the demonic are like more amoral forces of nature too. And so for a lot of people, the angel demon distinction is kind of meaningless, but I mean, when compared to the angelic, everything else is demonic. Right. So it's one of those things where looking into angels is a smaller group. Whereas looking into the demonic is like, well, now you get to have fun with ghost stories. Now you get to have fun with with jinn and like with different apparitions.
That's
things.
The background with like, at least to a certain degree, or analogous to Japanese fascination with Catholic imagery and the demonic stuff.
Yeah. And the mystic gods also get lumped into there as well.
Yeah. But that's because their spiritual system's so fundamentally different also than their presupposed spiritual system is so fundamentally different than what we see in Western society or in Middle Eastern society even.
True.
Yeah. Well, and with Japan's fascination with the angelic and the demonic matches their preloaded cultural religion with with good and bad spirits running things,
but not gods. Yeah.
Yeah. But not having a relationship to a unified deity.
Yep. But rather the spirit of a god is in everything or around everything.
No, there are good spirits and there are bad spirits that are constantly in conflict within nature, but that so angels and demons are easy to map onto those and you can not talk about God. In a way, because like you're saying, like you can avoid that conversation in the same way that when Catholicism moved into Mexico, you have them easily adopt Mary into Santa Muerta and the death goddess. And you see those two merge where it's there. If there's a
there's a cultural aspect. If the culture has a similar feature to Catholicism, when Catholicism moves in, you could see imagery start to syncretize.
Yeah. That's why when you watch anime and they use Christian ideas, it's usually like, oh, they'll make pacts with demons to fight God kind of thing.
Yeah.
As like a way of, it's interesting to see that perception of what Christian mysticism looks like, because it's taking the imagery and applying it to their system.
Yeah.
Which actually helps us understand it a little bit better, I think.
Well, I think the Mary to Santa Muerte is, there's way more complexity going on there.
Yes.
And I don't think it's as easily brought in, but I think it is, it's a way of stripping what otherwise gets all of its spiritual weight, because it's in its connection with Christ. Like Mariology, which we actually almost talked about today.
True.
All
coming
of
down the pipeline.
Yes. All of its importance comes from its role actually within Christology.
Yeah.
And if you're able to divorce it from that, if you're able to extract it from Christology and place it in something else, then you don't have to deal with Christology at all.
Yes.
True. That's why we see at like after the legalization of Christianity in 300 ish, that you see like a lot of more Christian heretics start to pop up and merging with pagans and all these kinds of things. It happened before that too.
Yeah. But there's more complexity going on there, but in general. Yes.
Obviously it's more complex than that, especially since we don't know a lot about that time period and everything about it. But we do know a good amount. It's very fascinating. Patristics is interesting.
The other two things about the original question being
fascination with the demonic.
Yeah. People are naturally curious about the mysterious, and the Bible itself is pretty mysterious on both the angelic and the demonic, but specifically the demonic. Like the fact that we see a lot of demonic activity in the Gospels and then they are lightly referenced in the rest of Scripture.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to like the what is it called? The apocalyptic works.
Yeah. So And there's a lot of imagery describing them rather than just what they are. Or like, oh, this is a demon, but it doesn't describe what it looks, does, whatever. And so there's a lot of mystery around that allows people to fill in the gap with their imagination. And so I think that's why culture, a lot of times, and in art and in creativity and in music, it allows people to fill in the gaps, and then it creates a culture and a lot of produced imagery that is not in the Bible.
Yeah.
So then it ends up creating its own culture and its own history and its own. And so that's why you get Dante, and that's why you get all the art where like demons are just like and in the corners of things and angel wars,
a big.
Yeah. And so it lends itself, the human curious mind lends itself to speculate and to create things where there's mystery.
Yeah.
And so matching with that, you also have the human proclivity to find reasons for things in anything but God. And so you've got the stars and the horoscopes and the planets and all these things. And oftentimes those things are aligned with angels and demons in the biblical text. And so you could track through thousands of years of history that the reason people see angels and demons organizing life and affecting life through people's actions, stemming loosely and then divorced from that original idea of the stars guiding people's lives.
Yep.
Interesting.
Can I say my crazy thought in real time? There's a bit of this sympathy for Satan idea that's grown in the last like 60 years. Obviously, it's existed before that.
I think it started with Milton's Paradise Lost.
That's fair. That's fair. Although I think Paradise Lost in the actual book is pretty anti-Satan.
Oh, he tries.
When Satan cries or he weeps or he mourns for the loss of like his paradise that he thought he had, or that he that he took away from Adam and Eve and stuff like that. It's interesting. I think that the growth of it has allowed is partly because people, I think, the sympathy for Satan is because they see Satan as basically the torchbearer, the Prometheus that brought them fire kind of thing. Now I am going a little, that is literally what this Church of Satan says, but I'm not even just saying that, like atheists mm-hmm. in general that used to be Christian and not, or their family was Christian and they're not Christian, that kind of thing. Satan is a bit of a Prometheus in that sort of sense, that he's the enlightened one who brought this anti-God kind of look to it. Mm-hmm. And so Satan is seen not as a good guy necessarily, but rather that the progenitor of themselves.
Yes.
Well, no, I that is a bit of psychoanalyzing people that I don't even know.
Yeah.
So I don't like doing that, but it is sort of how I feel.
It's not just true. It's not just psychoanalyzing. It matches over their philosophical frameworks almost intrinsically. You have this idea of hyper inflated self-autonomy values, right? Like an individualism is rampant in our society.
Hear that, folks? Free will is satanic.
Continue. Wow. Very true. Free will doesn't exist.
Bondage of the will does. Anyway, carry on. So you have that type of stuff too. And you also have this all mirrored in like Nietzschean type concepts of the Übermensch, right? One who can construct his own values and construct it. Like the utter rejection of order.
Yeah, think of John Lennon's Imagine, right?
Well, what's funny is there's a little bit of, this is why some people, like actually my priest will say the rejection of realism and full-blown acceptance of nominalism is actually one of the fundamental problems. It's because there's this idea of saying there is no right or wrong essence to a thing or to anything. It's just how you use it and what you make of it.
Right.
And when you apply that to like a pencil, sure. Once you start applying that to marriage, to what does it mean to be a parent? What does it mean? What is your role in society? What is the role of the government? What is the role of like, what is your spiritual state? Like things go wild and that just blurs.
How dare you dictate how I live?
Right.
I'm just kidding.
Nature will. And that's like, those themes are so embedded in Nietzsche. They're so embedded in our culture's values. It's weird. Like to Colton's point, it's not just psychoanalyzing. There's weird philosophical and maybe even metaphysical and epistemological undertones that are all lining up on these debates.
They're saying people who are atheists are all Satan worshippers.
I mean, Jesus does.
Yeah, that's kind of.
You know what? There's an aspect of that. I don't know if there's any of you that exist, but I do not literally think you worship Satan, but rather that your way of thinking leads to the same way that Satan goes.
I think it is, you either worship Christ you don't.
No, I
there's
agree.
A binary. And in that sense is what I mean that there's a binary. Yeah,
the complicated sense people, comes from how people, that's applied.
If people want to misread that to get a soundbite to say you worship Satan. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We can move on if we want to. Do we feel like we've nailed it down and solved demons?
We have solved demons.
Joel, that's why we have demons, no other episodes are no on more demons. Second rate saints. Okay. Do we want to do another one that's a response to the demons episode, or we want to move on to something else?
Up to you.
So you are in charge. Me,
you're the big cheese.
Yeah,
you're
the big cheese.
Dang it. Why is that your thing? That's my thing. And the large cheddar.
Biggie cheese. The mega matzah.
Super Gouda.
The super Gouda, the mega matzah.
Mega matzah.
I think we've just figured out our Patreon tiers. Anyways.
They're all great.
They're all cheese related.
Not coffee related, even though we can only be given them buy me a coffee.
Oh yeah, buy me a coffee. There we go.
Doesn't necessarily have to do with coffee.
Totally forgot to plug that earlier. So buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/.
Buy me a coffee.
That's the plug.
so bad.
All right, what's our question?
In reference to Josh and Joel's demon episode, Enoch to eschatology. This one has a little bit of everything. Thank you.
Enoch didn't die, he assumed.
This is a quote from the episode. The war on hell is the salvation of the lost. That's a good bumper sticker.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. I do agree that's a good bumper sticker. I can understand Joel's rejection of the amillennial position, but I am confused about what part of Christ's victory Josh mentions just prior that Joel does not seem to be convinced of in the binding of Satan. In the already but not yet, it may feel that way, but in reality, the serpent's head is crushed, right? I'm possibly blinded by my own amillennial take on things. Please feel free to elaborate. Okay, so this Joel. This is something we kind of came against each other with.
I feel more educated on the subject.
Correct me if this
now.
Is. Yeah, I don't know. This I'm is challenging my memory a little bit, so we'll see if we can
Prometheus
actually.
Prometheus has given me his knowledge. I'm ready.
Okay, in the amillennial view,
Prometheus is Satan. So.
Oh, I didn't say that.
In the amillennial view, Satan is bound. Is that correct? Is that what we were discussing in the episode? It seems to me, in a pretty objective sense, that Satan's still doing stuff. Right? It seems like the demonic is still very active, but that also could be because before I just kind of rejected putting my stake in any eschatological position.
Revelation agrees with you.
I was a premillennialist. And so I think the reason that I have a problem with the already but not yet being that Satan's head is currently crushed and that he is currently bound is that I think Satan's actions are pretty evident within the world, even if it's not as much in the West or whatever, but I think the spirit of the Antichrist is pretty obviously around. Does that make sense? Like, maybe I'm not critiquing the specific question that he's asking, but like that's to me that seems consistent. But if there's holes, poke them.
Can I ask a question? Sorry, Caleb, do you want to respond to it before I ask a question about it?
Are you going to get into larger eschatology or more into specifics about? Whether or not
what the millennium means based on what we're talking about,
what the millennium means in perspective to Satan's activity on earth, I think should be the scope of the question.
My question is, when we talk about millennialism, are we talking about what specifically Revelation says or whether there will be a millennium of some kind in the end times? Because if we're talking about Revelation, the answer is complicated. If we're talking about if there's going to be some period of time in which Christ comes back, and then he defeats Satan after the rule of the church, and there's then a final battle. That's different. Like, obviously, it's based on Revelation, but it's not just Revelation that it's based on. So it gets more complicated.
It would flip flop at least in my like I said when I would consider myself a premillennialist, which now I'm a little bit more open to it. But I would usually put the millennial reign, like after the conquering of Satan. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That it isn't after the reign of the millennium that Satan is conquered and then held at the bottom of whatever river. Again,
premillennialism says that we are not yet in the millennium.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm. Amillennialism says that there was no millennium described in Revelation, but rather is a constant state or an earlier or a later, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's describing some real effect in or some past event that what doesn't have to do with a time period specifically.
It's that Christ, it does have to do with a time period, the dispensation of sorts. What it is that we are currently in Christ's reign.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Which is a hard take.
Why I asked about the Revelation thing, because if we're saying amillennialism based off of what Revelation says, amillennialism in Revelation is that Revelation has nothing to do with a millennium at all. But rather the millennium described in Revelation is typological and not real.
Not
that's typical. That is not the amillennialist I know.
That's not amillennialism as a general concept in eschatology. No, but the millennium described in Revelation, you either believe it came before, it came after, it's all permeating, or it doesn't exist as an actual time period.
That's not my understanding, but okay. Can I address the question that you had earlier?
I think I want to nail down what Colton's saying. We can go to yours in a second.
Sure.
The amillennialist view is that we're currently living through that period, or if it's not a period restricted to time,
Yeah, that one more specifically. Yeah.
Okay, not a period restricted to time. I'm okay with that, I suppose, but it doesn't work if you want timeline eschatology.
You're right.
Okay, cool. Well, then I think we are on the same page then, and I disagree with that.
Okay, I don't think the other two are.
Yeah, the two amillennialists are not totally on board with this.
Saying that we're currently in the reign of Christ is not necessarily amillennialism. It's saying that the millennium described in Revelation isn't a pre or post event.
I think that you're taking a very specific view of amillennialism and saying that that's the whole thing.
I'm not saying it's the whole thing. I said there's two different types of millennialism. That when people talk about it, they mean either what is described in Revelation or what general eschatology says.
Sure.
Yeah. And you guys are talking about general eschatology. What I'm talking about is Revelation.
Okay.
Does Revelation describe a specific period of time?
I think to answer that question,
that's more what Joel's going into.
I think to answer that question, we'd have to do a deep dive into Revelation.
Okay.
Cool.
To answer Colton's point, to answer Joel's question, I wish I could find it. And even if I did find the book, I probably wouldn't be able to find the quote. St. Athanasius is on the incarnation. He notes how the demonic activity since Christ's crucifixion and resurrection has been on a steady decline, right? Now you can like say, yay or nay and all that kind of stuff, right? And we've made mention how the Oracle of Delphi, the last thing that they mentioned is kind of like, hey, I'm not getting any more messages. Mm-hmm. How does it go? No longer has Apollo a hut nor prophetic laurel. The water has dried up. The voice is stilled. Mm-hmm. And there's, I think what you have, it would be nice if our clean understandings of just Christ has bound Satan, boom, okay, easy understanding of in immediately works. But there is, like, if you take from Daniel, what does it mean that the angelic messenger has to fight the prince of Persia?
Yeah.
And like, what does that mean geographically? What does that mean? Like, the reality with its connections to material, the spiritual reality with its connections to material reality and how those two things interplay, that hasn't been laid out at all, right? Well, what has been said, right, is that all power and authority has been given unto him, Christ. He has defeated hell and death. And I'm very hesitant simply to look around and say, well, bad things are still happening. Mm-hmm. There's still clearly demonic things that are happening in some sense. Therefore, I don't know if Jesus has bound Satan.
Okay.
I'm worried about that.
I'm okay with saying the war is being waged. I don't know if I'm, and I'm even fine with saying the already, but not yet, that it's already been won in a sense.
Okay.
But to me, it just seems a little bit inconsistent to say, oh yeah, and all the forces of hell have been completely blocked up and are no longer affecting humanity.
Well, and that's what
I know you don't, but that was my response to Caleb. And that's specifically what's pointed out in the question is what is my objection to the Christ's victory over Satan?
Yeah.
Right. Not that I don't think
it's that there's no demonic activity whatsoever. That's not true.
Yeah, it's not true, right? Yeah. And so that was my gut instinct to that. But again, I don't have a super developed eschatology. I more have a rejection of things I don't agree.
That's probably healthier than you think it is.
Probably. Caleb doesn't think so, but I appreciate you, Cole.
Yeah.
And matching on top of what Caleb said, you've got the promise in Daniel was that the kingdom would be given over to him when he goes up to his father.
Yeah.
On his ascension, he does go up to his father. Mm-hmm. And Stephen then does see him standing next to God at the throne.
Yeah.
All power and authority has been given unto him.
Yeah. Colossians does describe that he has authority over everything as a result of the cross, but also because he's God. And then you have with the temptation of Satan that Satan will give him the kingdom if he worships him, but he doesn't take that because by not worshiping him and dying, he receives the kingdom from his father. You then have in 2 Thessalonians that Paul makes the statement that the awaited Antichrist is being held back by Christ. And it's stated through an individual, but the individual through the word and through the church and through Christ, through God. You also have Jesus, his own statements saying that there will be a time coming up when there will be that great falling away, under such an individual where people decide grow cold and follow teachers of their own liking. And so if we're waiting for this moment where this Antichrist individual comes and people fall away to him,
yes,
that sounds more like when Satan gets released from the prison and there's the great war.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes.
See what you're saying.
And so if we're in this period where Christ is reigning and both Paul and Jesus are referencing, we're in this time period where Satan is being held back, his influence in raising this individual to oppose the church, then that sounds like the 1,000 year reign, which 1,000 years in apocalyptic language rarely, if ever, is an exact time period.
Of course. Yeah.
Usually just describing a long time,
an age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not demanding mathematical consistency.
But most modern millennialists don't believe in a literal 1,000 years, as in it has to be up to the day 1,000.
No. And you're right. You're right.
There's would a also time say, period that happens
they,
after.
They would also say that there's an age, but they would correct me now if I'm wrong.
Okay.
They would articulate that there is a period where Christ comes and reigns earthly.
Yep.
And then after that, Satan is released.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then after
for the last battle.
And then after that, Christ comes down with his in a almost third like coming, a certain degree, with the host of heaven and wins the Armageddon.
Depends how dispensational you want to get. Because it can be. Okay, maybe I've been skewed by certain people I've read, but many people are like, it will be when Satan is released, it will be futile immediately. And that will be the time described in Joel and described in Revelation is the time where they're judged and cast finally into the pit. Mm-hmm. The final judgment of the nations, the final judgment, everything that's talked about as the Battle of Armageddon or Medigo or whatever you want to call it, or the battle described at the in Joel or described in Ezekiel, Jeremiah, one of the two, I can't remember.
Ezekiel.
That is when that happens. It's the final hurrah of the unsaved kind of thing. Whether or not Christ leaves for a little bit and comes back, there are some people who believe that, but I don't think that's the majority. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that.
Well, here's the thing. The same people that demand 1,000 years to the day do not have the consistency or understanding to understand apocalyptic literature. And so immediately all their other beliefs become kind of nebulous and they demand things from the text that the text doesn't offer. That's the same Genesis problem.
That's true, but I don't think that necessitates any position of the pre or post mill positions.
No, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. What I'm saying is the reason I would not hold to an amillennial view that demands 1,000 years, say like a Seventh-day Adventist type deal where they are like, well, after 1,000 years, now we're in a different era of judgment. Deal. Like the great controversy stuff.
Wild.
Right.
Which,
you know,
not great.
I have to demand some sort of consistency, but also I have to allow the apocalyptic literature to speak at how it speaks, or in its native tongue, right? I can't just like throw dates at it. Anyways, this has been a question that just revealed my confusion at eschatology. So makes for fun Thanksgivings. Anyways,
was this clear though?
I understand your position better now. Yeah. I appreciate that for sure.
Yeah.
Also, interesting.
Not post. None of us are post millennialists because I don't know. It's cringe.
Post millennialist.
That is a great defense.
Post millennialism is probably my opinion the hardest to justify. But
being that it's over,
it already passed. We're now in the time after.
We're in the bad time.
Yep.
We're in the tribulation.
Christ has already reigned. We're no longer in that time. We're the whatever.
Yeah, real bummer to be like, oh yeah, and also the conquering of Satan. It not only Does it not mean anything? But it did, and we missed it.
We're in the age of the apostasy.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's why the Great Schism happened at 1000 whatever.
Yeah.
And that's in reference to, you know, like that's when Satan came back and he's been slowly dismantling the church and dismembering
it. Catholic and Orthodox Church are bad. Yeah.
No. So this presupposes that they're right.
Yeah. One of them is right.
And all church breaking up is an act of Satan being unbound.
Oof.
Right.
Oof. Actually, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
That sounds cool.
That would work. I've never heard anyone make that argument.
No.
I was thinking about it the other day.
That's because then you have to say that all modern denominations are bad.
Both the Catholics and the Orthodox better start making that argument.
I don't think there's going to be a Christian out there that's like, yes, all denominations are bad, including mine. Yeah.
I think churches are like science, where at one point they didn't know what the indivisible unit would be. And so they're just breaking down until they're at their very core parts.
What's the atom of Christianity?
It's Jesus. I would say the new Adam, but you know.
He's right.
Bar is
fair.
Unfortunately, a bar. Anyways, we can continue. Let's talk. Should we talk about baptism? Do we have enough time to talk about baptism?
I think so. I liked that we did that question, though.
It's fun.
It's a good question.
Revisiting.
Thanks for everyone calling me out in the comments. Appreciate it.
Carry on.
Let's do a baptism.
Let's do a baptism. Who here hasn't been baptized?
Colton finally being baptized.
I'm just gonna splash some water on
the mic. That's so funny. Baptism of the Spirit, maybe.
I mean, we did talk about in one of our other turds whether you could be baptized in VR. So
that is true. Yep. I was the advocate for it. So.
Yeah, man.
I've been baptized, not VR. That's funny though.
If you like won't accept sprinkling, but you're like, VR's fine though. Weird vibe. Okay. Also, way to ruin your Oculus.
IRL baptisms, not VR baptisms.
What's the other one? It's a fused and
confused, I think.
It's a fused.
I get the fancy immersed names. I forget the fancy names.
Full immersion. Infinite baptism.
What's the question?
Infinite baptism.
All baptisms
okay,
are
so
infinite.
We did an episode where Josh and I were
for the second one.
We're mainlining. You've got to do you guys' episode now. Your guys' episode. I haven't read Matthew Bates yet, but I think he presents a solution by reframing salvation as gospel allegiance. I don't know exactly what he says about baptism, but I think it makes sense that while the Spirit can work and regenerate a person's life, thief on the cross is an example, baptism is a very real and effectual ceremony. Ceremonies that do something by nature, by which a person is pledged their allegiance and is received into Christ. So this is somebody.
Isn't that just your argument, Caleb?
Part of it.
This is Caleb's alt account commenting.
It's
a friend of ours.
Here's the thing: Matthew Bates, Salvation by Allegiance Alone. I think we've mentioned it previously, where it's like pistis has that means faith. Means more than just like intellectual assent. It means like allegiance and like
devotion.
Trust. Yeah. Yep. Et cetera, et cetera. The allegiance to God alone, this would be the thing that he's emphasizing there is actually mirrored in the vast majority of, as far as I'm aware, all, early church baptismal rites that we have, which include a exorcism.
Yep.
And it's included in certain degrees in modern forms of baptism, if my memory is right.
You denounce Satan and his ways.
Yeah. Yes. Because there's this a bit of you do have to leave the kingdom of Satan to the kingdom of Christ.
Yep. Right? Repent.
And calling back on our demons episode, because those are the only two options.
I mean, it is true. I just don't like saying that atheists worship Satan.
I don't either. And I wouldn't ever frame it. I wouldn't ever say that without that framing.
Just clarify.
Yeah. The comment's argument, though, is essentially, wouldn't a reframing of salvation by allegiance get rid of all this discussion?
So Templars.
Templars. I think Josh just went a completely different direction with it, but yes.
If you're not going to die for Christ, and by that I mean kill someone,
or worship something called Baphomet.
Interesting.
What was the comment?
Baphomet, because it's baptism.
Funny.
What was the comment's main thing?
Joel, can you read the middle section just quickly? Because it has to do, he says the allegiance by salvation by allegiance stuff, but then promotes this idea of like, baptism might regularly have an effectual meaning to it and sometimes not, whatever. It doesn't, he says that that's the normal way, whatever. Sure. But that's what the argument's about, is whether or not that effectual part is. Can you read it again?
Yes. Oh, I'll see if I can pick it out. I think it makes sense that while the Spirit can work and regenerate a person's life, like the thief on the cross, but baptism is a very real and effectual ceremony, as ceremonies that do something by nature, by which a person is pledged their allegiance and received into Christ.
Right.
He's just saying that, like, is part of the confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, is that the effectual part, or is it the...
It also seems like...
I might be misunderstanding the question.
It seems like he's saying that the Holy Spirit can make exceptions when he does, but let the Holy Spirit make that exception. Yes. Otherwise...
Sure.
Always perform the baptism the way it's presented.
Yeah. Yes, generally while necessary. The Spirit can regenerate a person's life. I understand. Yeah.
Not to put words into the mouth of the person who commented this, mm-hmm. because I know I'm going to talk to them and they're going to call me wrong.
Maybe.
But is he saying that regeneration happens at baptism regularly? Because I disagree with that.
I think he's definitely linking the Spirit and regeneration. I don't know if he necessarily is connecting baptism to regeneration. Baptism is when you receive the Spirit, then yes.
Well, that's the thing, is that he says, like, when the Spirit gives regeneration at the thief at the cross and stuff like that as an mm-hmm. exception, the implication there is that otherwise than that, it's given with the regeneration's given with baptism.
Yeah.
Which I don't agree with.
Yeah, and you would use the seal imagery, is that right? Or the seal?
Sure, yeah.
Idea? Yeah.
Or.
To encompass it. Yeah. I would imagine a seal.
Get wrecked.
Imagine
this. Your seal. Whole theological position has been ruined by seal noises.
Oh, dang it. The question doesn't come... The problem isn't whether or not... Because... when we start calling baptism real and effectual, that's when we start getting into the disagreement between mm-hmm. our positions.
You believe baptism isn't real?
Whoa.
Jesus.
Now, I wouldn't go that far. However, okay. There isn't... No, I'm just kidding.
He's fully submerged. We can't see him anymore.
Sure anything's real?
Yeah, object permanence is your issue with baptism. When he goes fully under, my eyes, I just don't know anymore. Just,
it ceases to exist. I learned that from a show called Devs. So.
No. Oh, cool. Death to self is literally forgetting that you're there.
Then you drown.
You drown. That's infinite baptism. Okay, anyways.
Anyway.
I don't know if reframing salvation as allegiance smooths out the distinctions in baptismal theology.
Yeah, because I think both of us go, yes.
Yeah.
It is allegiance.
Yeah.
That's
part of it.
That is part of it. It's just where does the effectual part come in with regeneration? And I know I'm pulling back in that language mm-hmm. into it, which he's trying not to do, but we would both say yes, it is allegiance to Christ and Christ alone, which is why we can both say each other are right.
Yes.
And both are aligning themselves with Christ. The difference comes from how does that work?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the allegiance and dedication part necessarily, but rather, is it done effectually by doing so?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it done before that? Or is it done after that? Who knows?
That was a very long episode. So if you haven't, we're not going to be able to go through it exhaustively in this right now. Listen to it and see which side you're on, but see, what points of the argument you'd...
Yeah.
Is there part two?
There will be part two.
Oh my goodness.
Has to be.
We haven't solved it yet. After thousands of years.
Believe it or not,
the millennium's
2,000 years of dialogue about this, and we still haven't solved it.
Well, in fairness, 600 years of dialogue about this.
The millennium is over 2,000 years of
dialogue about this.
Since when? Can you find one before the Reformation?
Oh, interesting.
Me.
He might have got you.
John the Revelator.
There are some. In fairness, you can pull some stuff on the fathers. It's very hard, but you can try. I'll grant that. Fair.
Find heretics. Some pre-Christ.
Now what do you do?
You don't know what to do now.
Plato agrees with me.
There you go. It's Socrates. That's the guy.
You're talking to a guy who's Plato as a church father. What up? Oh, also,
that's the stuff that kids play with.
That's so funny. Plato's for kids. That's such a funny
man.
Statement.
I'm so sad that they took the status of planet from him.
You all hear about Pluto? It's messed up, right?
It's awful.
Anyways,
we are almost back.
Another comment. We're almost back. Just a correction comment. The guy who baptized himself was John Smith.
John Smith.
John Smith.
It wasn't just John Smith.
Or Joseph
Smith. Yeah, but he was...
Oh, sorry. Yes, it is John Smith.
Ex-Anglican that's like, I'm dunking myself because nobody else can do it.
Yeah, thank you.
He the church died.
John the Anabaptist doesn't quite carry the same weight.
Yeah, he refused the title of Anabaptist too. But
yes, but everyone's like, no, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, but he doesn't like the Anabaptists.
My question is like, did he put his hand on his head?
Here's the thing.
I just tried to do that myself.
As far as I'm aware, he literally just fell backwards into the water.
Interesting.
With people around, obviously.
He did the backstroke.
He did a very strong back float with the big starfish arms.
It's a little bit weird to me to be like, okay, it's a symbol. Has to be done in front
properly.
Of, yeah. Properly.
I'm going to do it wrong.
which is funny. But also that there are witnesses there. And they're like, no, do you want me to baptize you? And he's like, no, you can't do that. Yeah. He's like, well, we believe the same thing, clearly, because I'm here to watch you baptize yourself.
Later on, he did say
weird
that
vibe.
What he did was wrong, which it is. So I'm glad he said that at least.
Yeah.
But yeah,
he baptized himself. Joseph Smith made his own
Joseph
church.
Smith. John Smith. We're talking about John Smith now.
I know.
Love John British Smith.
Smith baptized himself. Joseph Smith made his own church.
There you go.
Not really.
You have the last name Smith, you know?
I just wish we had temples. Okay, guys, we got to wrap this up. We didn't get through every single one of the questions, but...
We are the temple.
We're the temple?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We house the Holy of Holies within us.
We have the Holy Spirit.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And so Mormon temples are like...
That's why Mary is actually the only one who carried as the Ark of the
Mary
Covenant.
Mary, did you know... Queen of Heaven.
It's okay. Okay. We'll get into the Mariology stuff.
Yeah, you guys want to even hear an episode in Mariology?
I do.
I think it'd be pretty interesting. I do too.
Actually, it is very interesting.
It's going to be combative, I think.
I think it'll be less than it has to be.
Well, yeah, because no one here is Catholic.
I'm going to try not to come out swinging because I do respect a lot of Catholics that listen to this podcast. But...
And you want them to respect you, so you're not going to be like...
We'll have a fun conversation about it. As all of us non-Catholics talking about Mariology and the Marian dogmas, yeah, it'll be very fun.
I don't know if they're gonna love that. We talked about Bath Mat earlier.
Bath Mat?
Why are you bringing up Bath Mat?
Because I want to tell a story before we're done. I was working as a pastoral assistant, and I was staying in a basement suite.
He's
and somebody
yawning.
Got me a... Josh is bored of the story. Is. Good story, though. They got me a shower curtain.
Oh, yes.
my like older couple landlords bought me a shower curtain because they're like, here, to move into the basement suite, you got to have a shower curtain.
They christened it with a shower curtain.
And it was like clearly like you probably just got it like a bargain bin somewhere, yep. which is good.
Classic.
You don't have to go all over your shower curtains. I'm not going to stop, right? But then I'm like there by myself. Moving into the apartment, and I open up the shower curtain, and it's got Baphomet on it.
Oh, I did hear about this. Yeah,
like actually, the demonic like.
Then you went into the other room and had a burger, and you took it off and had a pentagram on it. Right,
anatomically correct as well. Mm. Right, came with jugs, is what I'm saying.
Sorry,
could
really?
Be eggs, but probably are not.
You, like actually.
Yeah, really. I think I have a picture of it somewhere.
I don't want to see that.
It's not great. And then I. Here's the thing.
Did you use it? Did you have to have a shower?
I did have to have a shower.
Okay. Catholics and Orthodox at home, would you shower with a Baphomet?
That's really
curtain?
The thing.
No.
And then here's the thing. I didn't want to throw it out and then have either. My landlord see that I threw out a brand new shower curtain they bought me, but I also didn't want to have it hung up. So
it literally had a goat-headed demon on it.
It was like, it wasn't like a, hey, this is kind of inspired by like, no, it's like, that's just the guy. That's the Baphomet.
Well, is it a guy?
It's a guy. Ben Shapiro's got a word for him.
Is Baphomet, Beelzebub, Apollyon, and the other one? Are they all the same person?
No.
Baphomet's just the term we get from the Knights Templar worshiping something that was whatever. It actually, really? Like some people speculate, it could just be like the spear that
was it Spear of Destiny? Is that what they called it?
The Lance of Longinus.
Yeah. Like it was some kind of artifact. We kind of lost what that was. And then when everyone was like Templar, nice Templar, probably demonic and doing some weird stuff. They're like, hey, Baphomet's probably Satan. But it's, at one point they thought it was like some Christ related artifact that they were worshiping. So,
oh, wow.
It's really weird when you get into the history.
Worshiping any physical object is probably not going to do.
No, but when you're cool knights trying to do like hardcore.
That's true. That's the least of the issues I have with the Knights Templar.
Yeah, so. Knights Templar got some other stuff going on.
Guys, you want to hear something cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Baphomet. Some scholars believe the name is a corruption of Mahomet, which is a translation of Muhammad.
Yeah, I don't think the Knights Templar are worshiping Muhammad. There was one of those.
Where they were the Hashashin or whatever they're called. That.
What's that?
Whatever we get the word assassin from, that there may have been like double agent Templars type deal.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because they were one of the only sects that were allowed to denounce their faith.
We actually talked about the assassins in the
baptism episode?
Not in the baptism episode. No, in our the episode that's probably coming out next week in the whatever
intertestamental
fall of Jerusalem,
the sex appeal.
Yeah,
the description of Baphomet that you gave was it has female genitalia on top and has male genitalia on.
No, thankfully this one didn't go down to waste.
What is this also, guys?
When you see the presentation, it's one hand is pointed down, one hand is pointed up.
Yep. That was
It's because the presentation of Baphomet is a representation of the balance of opposites, male, female, good and evil, up, down.
I thought he was just dancing like an Egyptian.
No,
walk like an Egyptian.
No, it's Baphomet's hands are an inversion of a statement in the creation of the temple.
So yeah.
Baphomet's version is as below, so above.
Right.
God's statement is so above, the temple so above is a presentation.
As above, so below.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Anyway, just leave your address and I'll send you a shower curtain. No, I don't know where it is. I think I see it. Anyways, this has been Second Rate Saints. We get to close out, brothers in Christ.
Yeah.
This has been Second Rate Saints. If you want to check out our over past and future episodes, you can check us out at secondratesaints.com. If you'd like to donate, you can check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints. If you have a question, comment, or concern, you can use the chat feature on our website, or you can use our email at secondratesaints@gmail.com. What's that?
Buy me a coffee.
I already said buy me a coffee.
I'm sorry.
You weren't even listening.
No,
I wasn't. Caleb didn't buy a coffee.
At least when I yawn, I still hear what he says.
That's not true.
You have coffee right in front of you, Josh.
I drank it already. It was decaf.
I'm saying ask. I'm saying ask again because we're poor. No.
Caleb wants me to ask you for more money. Greedy Caleb.
Thank you for listening to the Second Rate Saints. Please read David M. Rhodes, the book that has numbers on it.
The book that has numbers on it.
Israel Revolution.
Algebra 1. No, okay.
Algebra 1.
That's almost as important as the four reasons to do
things. One.
The big cheese. Yeah, we're getting all the memes out.
Oh, the Templars worshipped a shower curtain named Baphomet.
End the episode, please.
This has been secondratesaints.com.
Thank you for listening.
We are so back, baby. Another scathing take from Colton on 50 Shades of Grey.